The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
Ukraine's capital is hit by Russian bombing, sending civilians scrambling for safety and raising alarm across Europe.
It's a matter of hours or days before Russia gets military control. The question beyond that is, does the conflict spill outside Ukraine's borders?
Plus, we'll have the latest on the war's commodity supply shock and new CDC guidelines for masks expected today. It's Friday, February 25th. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. Russia has intensified its attack on Ukraine overnight. Air raid sirens sounded in Kiev early this morning as the capital was rocked by explosions. Ukrainian media reported that three people had been injured, one of them critically, when a rocket fragment hit a residential building in the city. Ukrainian officials said Russia is attacking on a wide front along the country's frontiers, from Belarus to the north, Russia to the east, and Russian-controlled Crimea in the south. In an address overnight, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said he is the primary target. And he accused Russia of striking not only military targets, but also civilian sites. WSJ national security reporter Brett Forrest in Kiev says highways have been jam-packed as people flee the capital seeking refuge to the west.
People have been largely fleeing west, principally to Lviv and onward into Moldova or Poland or elsewhere. And it also created a bit of a frenzy on the roadways. I spoke to a lot of people who spent the entire day on the roads and still didn't make it to the border.
In Russia, there have been anti-war protests in several dozen cities against military operations in Ukraine. As Journal Moscow correspondent Evan Gershkovich explains, such public rebukes of President Vladimir Putin's policies are unusual.
To see hundreds of people out in all these cities and to see 1,800 people detained is quite something. But what we also have to keep in mind is President Vladimir Putin has control over the media, control over the government, and for street protests to really influence him, we would have to see several hundred thousand people out in Moscow. So far, we're not seeing those numbers.
Meanwhile, the net of international sanctions on Russia is growing. The European Union is today expected to formally sign off on sanctions that will cut 70% of Russia's banking system off from international financial markets and place limits on the amount of money Russian elites can hold in the EU. Overnight, French President Emmanuel Macron did briefly speak with President Putin at the request of Ukraine's leader. Macron said he felt Putin had lied to him by choosing to attack Ukraine even as the two leaders were continuing to explore a diplomatic resolution. He also added that Paris would accelerate its deployment of troops to Romania, strengthening NATO's eastern flank. NATO leaders are meeting later today to discuss the crisis. We'll have much more on that and the changing security landscape in Europe later in the show. In other news, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention are expected to update COVID-19 guidelines today that include new metrics for recommending the use of masks. Existing CDC guidelines are based on the number of cases and positive tests, leading the agency to recommend people wear masks indoors in roughly 95% of U.S. counties. However, that's created a disconnect as many cities and states have dropped their mask rules. Instead, the agency's new guidelines are expected to center on the volume of severe illness in communities, as well as the number of available hospital beds. Sources tell the Journal that President Biden has reached a final decision on his nominee to replace Justice Stephen Breyer on the U.S. Supreme Court. The three potential nominees include Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson, Judge Juliana Michelle Childs, and California Supreme Court Justice Leandra Kruger. An announcement on Biden's pick could come as soon as today. A White House official has declined to comment. And we're exclusively reporting that the Securities and Exchange Commission is investigating whether Tesla stock sales by CEO Elon Musk and his brother Kimball Musk violated insider trading rules. The SEC's investigation began last year after Kimball sold Tesla shares one day before his brother took to Twitter, asking users whether he should unload 10% of his stake in the company. Spokesmen for the SEC and Tesla didn't respond to a request for comment. It didn't take long after Russia's invasion of Ukraine for the leader of NATO, Jens Stoltenberg, to articulate the stakes of Vladimir Putin's actions for the security of all of Europe.
Peace on our continent has been shattered. We now have war in Europe on a scale and of a type we thought belonged to history. This is a grave moment for the security of Europe.
With full-scale conflict near its borders, NATO members are in emergency meetings today with all eyes on how the alliance will respond. For more, we're joined by the Journal's Brussels Bureau Chief Dan Michaels. Dan, welcome.
Thank you very much for having me.
Of course, what is the latest on NATO's reaction to Russia's invasion of Ukraine?
NATO has met in emergency meetings yesterday, and today we'll hold an emergency summit of leaders, including President Biden, to figure out what to do next. Yesterday, it also activated defense plans, which put troops on higher alert and give military leaders from member countries greater flexibility in moving troops around, positioning them, doing what's necessary to defend NATO territory.
Articulate for us the worst case scenario fear that exists among NATO members if Russia's invasion of Ukraine is allowed to play out.
I think at this point, considering that invasion is underway on a massive scale, it's clear Russia is going to take Ukraine. The Ukrainians don't really have the wherewithal to stop them. They can put up resistance, and they will. Yesterday, there was some pretty heroic Ukrainian resistance. But it's a matter of hours or days before Russia gets military control of important nodes in Ukraine, probably Kiev. So the question beyond that is, does the conflict spill outside Ukraine's borders? There's no indication at this point that Russia wants to do that. Putin seems very focused, at least for the time being, on Ukraine, but there's always the danger of something like that happening.
Dan, overnight, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky called on European leaders to give a clear answer about whether they supported NATO membership for Ukraine, but he said nobody answered. They were afraid, in his words. Have any NATO members asked the alliance to do more to support Ukraine? And if so, what has the response been to that?
There has been discussion of doing more to support Ukraine. It hasn't really been through NATO. NATO is a military organization focused on defense for the most part, though it has, for example, operated in Afghanistan and Libya. The NATO member countries can do things individually. And it is quite possible that some of the countries that were part of the Warsaw Pact and the Soviet bloc, the Eastern countries might want to support, for example, if there's a Ukrainian resistance. In some more forward-leaning countries like Britain and now the United States, there's discussion of supporting resistance. Anything like this would not be done through NATO. So NATO as an organization will be focused on defense, while the member countries, more at a national level, could do things to support Ukrainian resistance.
And Dan, what does this tell us about wider European unity right now?
The level of unity in Europe over the past few weeks has been quite high. This may have surprised Putin. It's hard to know what he's thinking, but he in the past has done a pretty good job of splitting the Europeans. But at the same time, yesterday, the European Union adopted sanctions. There was unanimity on that. NATO adopting its defense plans, there was unity on that. And this is notable because some EU countries, especially Hungary, have in the past sort of taken Russia's side or made it difficult for the EU to take action against Russia. And Hungary was very much on board yesterday. And in NATO, Turkey, which is not a European Union member, but has over recent years bought advanced military equipment from Russia and sort of flirted with Russia. But Turkey is also a geostrategic rival of Russia's and is probably more closely allied with Ukraine, wants Ukraine to stay strong as a buffer between it and Russia. So Turkey in NATO has been on board with NATO plans. So the Western alliance has held within limits.
And Dan, Ukraine's pursuit of NATO membership has been cited by Russian President Vladimir Putin as part of his rationale for this war, that he views it as a risk to Russia to have NATO members bordering the country. And yet, couldn't the attack on Ukraine in the long run strengthen the appeal of this alliance to states like Ukraine?
A couple of things there. I think his objection to Ukraine's NATO membership is somewhat of a red herring, because it was pretty clear Ukraine is quite far from joining NATO. The fact that Putin didn't want Ukraine in NATO, it's not shocking. The U.S. doesn't want Russian troops in Cuba or in Venezuela. So it's understandable that from a geostrategic perspective, he wouldn't want NATO so close to him. He's already got NATO in the Baltics and in former Warsaw Pact countries. Though there is a feeling in retrospect that maybe NATO and the West pushed too hard with some of these countries. There maybe could have been more thinking about Russia's perspective on some of that. Now, given the problems that have arisen from Ukraine wanting to join NATO, when NATO members offered Ukraine a potential membership in 2008, they also offered it to Georgia. Georgia ended up in a war with Russia that it lost, and it lost territory. There's no country out there at the moment that is an obvious candidate for NATO membership. It does seem that expanding NATO from both sides is not in the cards anytime soon.
Dan Michaels is the Journal's Brussels bureau chief. Dan, thank you for the time.
Good to talk with you.
Coming up, the conflict in Ukraine doesn't just threaten European security, but also the continent's energy supplies. We'll look at the commodities roiled by war and how the EU can wean itself off of Russian natural gas after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high volume, high speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
European sanctions announced overnight crucially did not cover the import of Russian natural gas into the EU. Questioned on this, Commission President Ursula von der Leyen said they were urgently looking at how to wean Europe off its dependence on Russian energy.
Russia has proven, Gazprom has proven, not to be a reliable supplier. We have been working hard in the last weeks to come to a stage where we are able to say today, for this winter, we would have enough supplies of LNG gas from reliable suppliers. But this is the short term. We have to develop a clear strategy how to get completely independent of Russian fossil fuel.
For more on this, we're joined by WSJ commodities reporter Joe Wallace. Hey, Joe.
Hi, Luke.
Joe, first off, why is it the EU is so dependent on Russian natural gas that it can't be included in a sanctions package?
I think the crux of this is that Europe, and in particular Germany, its biggest and most powerful economy, for decades thought that you could treat Russia as a business partner in the energy market. That meant that even after Russia cut off gas supplies to Ukraine in 2006 and 2009, you really saw Europe's dependence on Russian gas continue to grow. And a constant refrain from both German energy companies and the German government until really this week has been that this was purely a business relationship. There were no geopolitics involved in it. There were other factors as well, not least the decision of Germany to shut its nuclear power plants, which left the country more dependent on gas, as it also pushed to wind down its coal-fired power stations to tackle carbon emissions. And also Europe's own domestic gas production really fell.
And as far as I understand, this European energy reliance on Russia is so deep, it's actually somewhat deepened despite the conflict we've seen this week. Is that right?
Indeed. Somewhat counterintuitively, more gas was flowing through Ukraine from Russia to Central Europe and beyond yesterday than it had done in several weeks. That's because prices in the spot market here in Europe shot up, and under contracts they have with Gazprom, the state-controlled Russian gas producer and exporter, European utilities could actually save some money by maxing out those contracts and getting more from Gazprom through these pipelines yesterday. So in the midst of a war zone, they were getting more gas from Russia through Ukraine.
Joe, are there any actual viable alternatives to Russian gas that Europe could be tapping into now as this conflict continues to unfold?
I think you have to look at this in the short and the medium and long term. Officials in Europe are now bracing for any potential eventuality, including one in which Russia turns off the taps entirely. That is considered unlikely still, given the importance of both oil and gas revenue to the Russian economy and the Russian state. In the short term, that there are a few steps Europe could take, but you're not going to make up for 40% of your gas supply in a few weeks. And ultimately, then you're looking at curbing demand and potentially asking things like factories to shut down, even shortening the working week, just making sure that gas keeps on flowing to those who need it most, poor people, vulnerable people, hospitals, critical infrastructure.
And beyond natural gas, what other sort of commodity market impacts could we see from a protracted conflict in Ukraine?
The more immediate effects we saw on commodity markets were in the oil market and in the grain market. So let's take oil first. Russia is an enormous producer of oil and exporter of oil, including to the US. The interesting thing is that Western governments so far have avoided hitting Russian oil exports directly with sanctions. But some of the industry are acting as if those sanctions are already in place because they're either going to come down the line. So yesterday, you basically saw a complete embargo in the industry on buying the main grade of Russian crude oil, which is called Urals. There was also a safety consideration because some of that oil comes from a port in the Black Sea, and the tanker companies didn't want to go there, partly because a Turkish-owned vessel got hit by a bomb yesterday near Odessa. So no one wants to go there. And then similarly, you had shipping in and out of Ukrainian ports was all but closed. That's really affected the movement of grains from the region. Ukraine, as well as Russia, is a big exporter of grain, in particular to countries in the Middle East, such as Turkey and Lebanon and Egypt, that already have pretty fragile economies.
That was WSJ Commodities reporter Joe Wallace. Joe, thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
And that's What's News for Friday morning. We'll be back tonight with a new show. For live coverage of the developments in Ukraine and the international reaction, visit the Journal's live blog at WSJ.com. I'm Luke Vargas with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.